I mean, we were surprised by this fact when we were researching that there are 8 million plus security guards in India. And in the end, all the gig economy is put together, the gig economy workers put together, that includes your delivery partners, mobility partners, or urban clap, it would probably not cross 4 or 5 million, right? So security guards are almost 2x that scale. You can be riding the crypto wave, the Web3 wave, the AI wave, or whatever wave it is, mobility, e-commerce, whatever. Ultimately, the fundamental principle that we've seen, at least I've been experienced to in whatever small, very, very inconsequential journey, is build what people are willing to accept and are willing to pay the right price. Don't even bother even building anything until you understand what cash flows mean. There was a data science team at Ola that figured out from the route journey and an acceleration, just the phone-based acceleration data, right? Phone-based accelerometer data, that maximum accidents happened in that Belandur area and in the airport road. So the idea was very simple. We had a network of patrolling guards across. And why did that come? That they were deeply embedded with the location service tracking that we had built. And that would allow one guard to serve a lot more, like maybe 100 or 150 plus properties, as opposed to having 1:1 mapping. So one of the biggest unfiltered feedback that I've personally received is, stop building fancy, stop building fantasy.
Today we have Sachet Kadam, co-founder of 56 Secure, a connected security platform. Started in 2020, 56 Secure integrates AI into subscription-based security cameras, solving real-time challenges in India's fast-growing $15 billion security landscape. With more than 8,000 cameras in Bangalore, 56 Secure offers both surveillance and personalized security services. Join Sachet on the Founders Unfiltered podcast for an insider's look into this very, very interesting business. Sachet, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Avril. Pleasure joining Junior VC.
Sachet, it's Coffee with Karan season. We do this rapid fire even if it's off right. Coffee with Karan season. But we get some very interesting answers here. So we'll start with the first one. If you could be a professional in any other field, what would it be and why?
I think I'd be a surgeon, because just the sheer amount of complexities and microsecond decisions you need to take is very interesting and exciting. So I think that's what I'd do.
Not one we've heard before. Quite different. Sachin, next one is, what's on your bucket list? Personally, what are some things that you want to do?
I'd be happy to contribute to some policy decision that a government can take and it can be used to sort of decide on a large transformative policy in India. So for example, just being a member of the India stack and helping shape that, right? So something, I mean, that would be part of my bucket list. Maybe as boring as it sounds, but...
It's a good one. It's real. Yeah. That's what matters. Right. And we are lazy with our questions. So what's one question you would ask yourself if you were the host of the podcast?
Are you pursuing startup because it's cool, or do you feel that, like, do you love building business?
Good question. Yeah. We will ask you that.
And what's your take on bootstrapped versus funded?
Funded always, because I think the days of creating anything credible being bootstrapped is, if not impossible, it's exceedingly becoming difficult, both from affording talent to even creating some dent or creating some product or a service that's impactful for your customers. So always a funded would make sense, at the cost of course, having a lot more responsibilities, but it's ultimately better for your customers.
How would you describe your company's culture in three adjectives?
Thoughtful, helpful, and cutting edge. Do it before everybody else can even think of it. Yeah, that's quite interesting. But we keep using this line that if you're not fast, you're last. So that's
nice. That's a good one. That's a good one. So why did you start up? Was it because it was cool, or because you wanted to
put So interestingly, again, me and my co-founders, right, we spent and our founding team as well, we and you would not it'll be difficult to believe that this happens in a company like Ola. So we all were colleagues at Ola. And for anybody outside, they just think Ola is a large mobility company solving day-to-day problems. But Ola does a lot of cool things in-house. And we've worked with more than 100 plus deep tech startups across the world to evaluate the technology, integrate a few and co-build few and internally build few. And that gave us a massive rich insight to sort of not just evaluate businesses, but see what sort of bolt and brick moves and like works and what does not work, right? So consider it consulting plus VC plus product all baked into one. That was the exposure we had. So it would Amazing. Also go full circle to see when the tire hits the tarmac, what sort of works. And we saw that security, physical security itself is a large digitized, a non-digitized industry. And why did that come? It was from with our exposure of what problems we faced managing a large fleet plus mobility ecosystem at Ola itself. So that insight is what led us to believe that there's a clear and credible business to be built out there.
Amazing. Can you talk us through your journey pre-Ola, actually, just from college, your entire experience up to Ola? And curious to know from you why there are such few deep tech entrepreneurs in India, because from the outside, 56 Secure may not seem like a deep tech problem, but I understand that it is. So if you can talk through that journey as well as probably answer this question that we would have.
Yeah, so I did my engineering here itself in Bangalore, and post that I had a very brief stint at Indian Institute of Science, just sort of forwarding what we had done in college. And even at college, we were doing some interesting projects, and it was very interesting that we were building an exoskeleton suit inspired by Iron Man.
Okay.
So, yeah, so nice. It goes back there. Around actuators and just helping carrying load per person, right? So
is that in pipeline for 56 Secure? You like have flying Iron Man in Indranagar?
Not an Iron Man, but we definitely see how we can integrate drones for
amazing,
like more coordinated and connected security.
Amazing,
right? So
that'd be cool.
Yeah, and drones not just human operated, but automated and orchestrated drones. So that's definitely a long term roadmap. So yeah, at IIC, got a real sense of what it takes to convert a research paper into something useful and actionable. But again, that the whole idea was for me to then pursue master's or a PhD abroad. And that was why I sort of had a stint at IIC. But I decided that's exactly what I don't want to be doing, because it's for a different material and a character that research is not suited for all. That requires a lot more commitment and intensity. At least I'm not that person for that. So, and then I started to dabble with a lot of companies and startups. And me and my college mates just started this robotics company that could, it was built on similar lines of a Scratch or a Raspberry Pi, right? So that took some traction, that was doing decent. And I, from there on, for whatever financial reasons, I decided to move on. And interestingly, I got a stint at a boutique strategy consulting company. Did a couple of stints there. And then we again jumped in to start, interestingly, a media tech company, which was largely focusing on music / videos. You can call it as an intersection of Spotify and video. So how do you integrate? And this was back in 2015-16, when there were a lot of streaming services, but it was not fluidic the way YouTube Music or Spotify or Apple Music today is. So we wanted to build this interesting aggregation of content and then build some video interaction layer for users to interact. So that technology was good. It was beautiful. We had a very tight team, and some of those who built that are now key part of the Creds tech team as well.
Fascinating.
Yeah, so the tech was nice, but the user base did not scale. TikTok came and rammed us left, right, center during that time.
Yeah.
But interestingly, Ola had launched this service called as Ola Play, where they were building in-cab infotainment system and building a lot of content and interactive technologies around that. And they saw that our team had good experience building that. So Ola approached us to join them in that journey to build and scale Ola Play. And that's where the
fascinating.
Yeah, we decided we take that opportunity because building it on our own and would be a difficult path. So that journey started from there. And then the Ola game happened.
Amazing. And from your two experiences, actually, so this is your second startup in some way. What takeaways did you have from that experience that you're applying today? And Ola's culture is externally known as a bit tough, but I know you have a very positive experience from there. So learnings from those two that you are translating into 56 Secure.
As cliche as it may sound, but I think 10, 20 years down the line, even new gen entrepreneurs starting off will have to answer this question. You can be riding the crypto wave, the Web3 wave, the AI wave, or whatever wave it is, mobility, e-commerce, whatever. Ultimately, the fundamental principle that we've seen, I've been experienced to in whatever small, very, very inconsequential journey is build what people are willing to accept and are willing to pay the right price. Just operate at that fundamental principle. That is number one. Number two, I think more than technology, more than trends, more than ability to market and sell, where that is also critical, your ability to understand cash flows is super critical for, like, you should not, don't even bother even building anything until you understand what cash flows mean. Right? And that could also mean if you're just building a, like a simple product like meme generator, right? And you want to make a company out of it. Don't even do that without understanding how a cash flow or a P&L works. Just get some exposure to what that really means, right? And third one is be fast. Get your validations faster. Get your shipment cycles faster. Get your experimentation tools faster, and whatever you do, be fast at it. I think these are the three main learnings out there. And now what Ola really thought, and for all the kind of demand that Ola work culture has of its people, one thing nobody will object to is its ability to teach you to get a lot of things done with limited resources, limited time. I think that's a crazy exposure that anybody working at Ola will get exposed to.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
100%.
And no challenge is difficult for folks at Ola in the sense that they get exposed to a lot of hard problem statements that you need to really apply thought, brain, effort, everything out there, collaborate with folks to solve. I think that's the key takeaway.
So it sounds like Ola was a great place to be. You're working on difficult problems, working with some really good people. Walk us through that journey. How did you decide to start 56 Secure? What were kind of your initial, like help us understand your frame of mind at that point in time and how you made that decision to leave Ola to start up.
So we had this team called Smart Mobility, right? And it was a team, it was a 0-to-1 team put together by the founders of Ola. And the idea was to really build tech because Ola had its own fleet of 30,000 plus cars. It had its, there were more than 250,000 vehicles that plied on the Ola platform and more, actually much more than the number stated. So there was so much of data around driver, vehicle, passenger that's going out there. And if you don't build tech and systems to manage this, it truly becomes difficult to provide a differentiated service. So in order to do that, this team was constituted to build this entire fleet technology platform that could help manage cars better, protect the assets, track the assets, and drive efficiencies of the vehicle. The same team had to build this entire computer vision ADAS product that could help reduce accidents, because accidents, especially in some very specific clusters, was a very big problem. Like there was a data science team at Ola that figured out from the route journey and an acceleration, just the phone-based acceleration data, right? Phone-based accelerometer data, that maximum accidents happened in that Belandur area and the airport road. So Ola was sitting with a lot of rich information in its data tool that we could take actionable insights. So we wanted to operationalize cabs with this accident prevention device to reduce accident rate there, track the vehicle health. And second is provide real-time passenger safety and response, where if there's a midway stop or route deviation, passengers could sort of be given immediate assistance via the call center. So this was some of the exposure we had, and it was a very small team that worked with the founders of Ola to build this, shape this, interact with a lot of companies, understand how their models are built in, how probably, and there was a mandate within Ola to either acquire one such company or invest in a company to co-build and build this business out. And that's where I met my co-founders and some of our mentors as well there. It was a very rich and deep experience. And then COVID happened, mobility industry, not just here, across the world came to a standstill. There were no fleets, there were no mobility, there was nothing running out there. And that's where we thought where we could utilize this this experience and some level of skill set that we had built to build a business that could be scaled in the future. So that's where security came in, because whatever we had built was in the intersection of safety technology, if you may.
Got it. And so your entire team during COVID kind of transitioned into working on 56 Secure,
right?
Or how did you guys
go
about building the prototype, getting your first customer? What were the
right? So
steps?
We were largely doing some sort of a prototype experimentation in Indiranagar. We were a B2C company primarily serving customers in Indiranagar in peak COVID when people are still at home. The idea was very simple. We had a network of patrolling guards across. And why did that come? That they were deeply embedded with the location service tracking that we had built. And that would allow one guard to serve a lot more, like maybe 100 or 150 plus properties, as opposed to having 1:1 mapping. So that was a key technology unlock. And then we introduced a camera-based technology to do real-time surveillance and threat prevention if there's any intruder or unknown visitor that comes in, and immediately alert the guard. So it was this very simple promise. We launched it as a B2C service for households in India, in Bangalore specifically. And 21 is when we started our commercial operations, scaling from one neighborhood to a couple of other neighborhoods in and around through the journey of 21 and 22. And we went through three COVID cycles, peak lockdowns and whatnot in that journey. But yeah, that's been the journey so far. But fast forward now, the company has grown and our focus has been to go beyond neighborhoods and get into a lot more enterprises and commercial as we speak.
Fascinating. So actually started with human guards and allocating
that's
them.
Right.
Can you walk us
Correct.
Through some of the tech and how that's evolved? Like, what is the role of
Correct.
AI and how are you guys,
sure.
Evolving with this whole Gen AI wave that
sure.
you're in it with?
Sure. So let me just quickly give you context of the industry itself, how it operates and what we are sort of trying to accomplish and do, right? So if you look at physical security per se, in economies where human capital is very expensive and scarce, they rely a lot more on systems. So systems and security is largely eye on the ground, and that's accomplished by CCTV cameras. And there is a lot of tech, computer vision and deep learning tech built in there to automate that monitoring in simple terms, right? But in India, as Avril mentioned in the start, it's a $15 billion large market, but almost 80% of that is man guarding. So interestingly, we were surprised by this fact when we were researching that there are 8 million plus security guards in India. And in the end, all the gig economy is put together, the gig economy workers put together, that includes your delivery partners, mobility partners, or urban clap, it would probably not cross 4 or 5 million, right? So security guards are almost 2x that scale. So, and this is from a labor department stat. And there are permanent guards, permanent security guards, and there are transient security guards who would be working as farm laborers or in different sectors, and they come in and take sort of security jobs for a couple of months, right? So why is that happening? Because the systemization and the technology on sites are still not evolved. Number one. Number two, ultimately security is put there both for monitoring and intervention purposes, which is better, and people believe that it's more efficient to deploy more people to do that job. So what problem we are trying to solve, and the tech that we are building, is what we call as a connected security platform, where we always believe the human intervention and human in the loop will always be critical to deliver the last mile security efficiency. So we integrate multiple security agencies onto a platform. The only thing that we offer with our technology there is to build a machine learning based system that will track the guards, track their location, tell them what to do, what tasks they need to do, what they don't need to do. And if there's any immediate response and intervention that's needed, where they need to go and actually go and look into, right? It could be an operational SLA, it could be a security threat or whatever happens. So this entire digitized AI-based dispatch system is what we've built. And then we reinforce it with our own inbuilt AI cameras and devices, where the cameras are doing real-time detections. It does facial recognition, it does vehicle and license plate detections, it does footfall, it does action detection of what is an authorized and unauthorized action. It picks up that anomalies and then triggers actions to humans to take action on. So this connected platform where you can latch on devices, latch on guarding from any premises, and then make it super seamless to customers is what we are trying to accomplish. To make security a lot more effective, a lot more optimized, and a lot more cost effective for customers.
You know, it's definitely a huge problem, and kind of blending this tech and human component is always a challenge. But can you walk us through that when you're building something that's, you know, like a deep tech kind of product like this, it's a big investment upfront, but you also talk about moving fast. So how do you kind of balance that? Right. How are you able to test stuff out early on and know what to build and build conviction?
Yeah, Mazen. So if you look at the industry, right, like earlier, for you to even think through a problem statement, build an entire system and just a basic, bare basic software stack around it, and then on top, add a machine learning or a computer vision solution on top, the timeline was practically 12 months plus. Because at least the AI world and the machine learning world, a lot was in research. For you to productionize it, operationalize it was quite difficult. This was just 4 or 5 years back. Today, again, software hyper accelerated. There are so many things. There's no code, low code tools coming in. You can accelerate whatever you need to get done. So your typical software shipment cycles has reduced from 3 months to 1.5 months. Now, due to this rapid platform-based development in the hardware world, for you to get a hardware out, as the timeline has shrunk from probably a 18-month cycle to a sub-9-month, 6 to 9 month cycle. Right. Now, coming to building computer vision models, LLM models, just in 1.5-2 years, given the level of rapid ecosystem that's built around it, today you can take off-the-shelf computer vision model, train it very, very quickly, and then deploy it as a production product in less than 3 months, right? And that the same would take probably more than 9 to 12 months, just 4 or 5 years back. So the ecosystem has evolved. The cost of doing that has evolved. The GPU cost and the overall ability to put it together as a package, that cost has shrunken down significantly lower. Now where the real work comes in for startups is to tightly bundle it and ensure at the last mile for the customers, you're making it relevant, effective, and truly orchestrated, if that word is suitable to use here.
No, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. But also curious, you know, you spoke a bit about the West and where when labor costs are more expensive, there's naturally a bigger focus on this.
Yeah.
Can you talk about some of the differences? I think in the US, it's been a pretty big trend. Security startups have been quite a hype. Why do you think one's tackled this problem in India? And what are some of the differences between India and US apart from the big cost?
So let me just take an adjacent industry, right? So if you look at warehouses, if you look at factory floors, it's the same problem. There's a large labor intensive task and dependency out there. And it took companies, it took the big manufacturing companies, the Boeings of the world and Airbus of the world, to bring in a lot of automation in there, and also a lot of automobile companies to bring in the manufacturing chain automation. And at the warehouse, probably Amazon has been at the forefront to use companies like Kiva, which is now their own company, to drive a lot of warehouse automation out there, which reduced the redundant manual load on people. That does not mean that everything is automated and people are out of factories, but people are doing a lot more meaningful tasks there. And now they're building humanoid robots, even at Tesla factories. And there's a company called Figure that's building humanoid robots, again, to do mundane, difficult tasks. Similarly, in the surveillance, security, and video analytics place, the cameras do a lot more. It goes beyond just security. For large format retail and large format commercial companies, the camera is doing intelligent monitoring of premises in terms of utilization, occupancy, productivity, and all of those things are done by camera. And at the security front, the camera does overtakes a lot of redundant monitoring, redundant tasks. So they are covering cost of those tasks with technology, and manpower has now moved to a lot more meaningful tasks like intervention, investigation, or adding true intelligence at every site to accomplish the task. In India, again, due to the availability of labor, the industry swelled up to about 8 million security guards to do all of this, including the mundane tasks, and the professional value of that labor has reduced. But now we are seeing a trend, and it will definitely shift there. We're already seeing it in a lot of sites out there. And let's take airport as a case in point, right? So be it and biometric ID-based authorization when you enter with DigiYatra to actual zone-to-zone tracking. All of those things are done by AI-based cameras and automated systems tracking. And where the man guarding, which is CISF guards, they practically add in true deterrence, true checks, and true intervention as needed. And that's exactly what will transform even the private security market in India. So it always starts with the higher end setups to bring in the best practices and best systems, and then the larger market will follow the trend. So India started with a manpower operations-led model. You'll see a lot more tech integration to build more systems and efficiencies across. And just last point to the demand side, what is the demand that's causing this adoption? The more you see housing, right? Housing is practically shaping from being independent households to a lot more community-led living with housing societies. A lot of retail is going from fully disorganized, scattered, fragmented retail to organized retail. And we're not even talking about the large brands, even small upstart D2C brands, smaller, old school traditional brands are going into organized retail formats. Industries, factories are all having organized spaces. So when there's a lot of organized real estate that will be added onto the market, the need for monitoring, intelligence and intervention, which is core part of security and surveillance, will become highly it's part and parcel of core real estate management, and that's what will lead to this demand spike.
Oh, that's really interesting. You went through an evolution, right? You started off consumer facing and then went to enterprise. Mm-hmm. It's a similar problem, but I'm sure the pitch must have sounded quite different. Can you give us an example of what the pitch was for consumers, and then what was the pitch for your early enterprise customers?
No, so with consumers, right, very few consumers, unless, of course, you are having very expensive assets at your house or you truly have a very high threat perception, you don't need dedicated physical guarding per se. So the promise was very clear that at the click of a button, either you click a button or the camera detects and triggers the guard. The guard is at your disposal as a shared guard, and he'll come in within a 3-minute SLA. That's one of our key USPs of our platform. Any location, anytime, anywhere, within 3 minutes, you'll have a guard intervention reaching you. So that was a pitch. And then on top of that, you can fortify your premises and keep your family safe with AI cameras strewn over your premises. And then you give access to the app to all your residents. It still remains the baseline sort of pitch to a lot of commercial and enterprise, where the only difference is instead of having shared guarding, you have dedicated guarding, where the guards are doing a lot more tasks, a lot more monitoring and intervention to enterprise and commercial spaces. Now on top, where the pitch sort of transforms from B2C to B2B is they need a lot more site intelligence. So a retail store would want to auto capture attendance of all their staff. They would want to understand footfall with gender and age classification. They would want to understand just the space utilization. Similarly, at a factory setup, there are certain SOPs that they need cameras to monitor and deliver. So that marriage and linkage where one infrastructure, and that happens to be security, is delivering both safety, security and site intelligence and operational efficiency. That marriage is where what we called as connected security, and that's the pitch to commercial and enterprises.
It's a very fascinating problem, Sajit. I think the stat that really took it for me was the number of security guards. That's
Right.
It's so intuitively true, but you never really realize it. Definitely right. More security guards than gig workers. It seems right. Like it's true. What have been your learnings trying to build for a space where you probably don't have any sort of playbook? Right. If you look at some of the larger scale companies in India, especially of the older era, they had somebody to look at. Sure. But you're looking at this so differently and uniquely.
Right.
It seems to be a very Asian problem as well, right. Where there's this mix of labor right. intensity as well as tech.
Right.
How do you think of building the business, scaling it? What are the principles you use?
The pros of this kind of setup where you don't have an operating model is the biggest teacher for you is your customer, and you build what patterns you see from them, where they are sort of facing challenges and what they need you to solve for them. So that's the pro is the customer out there. So it's as real as it can get and as unfiltered that it can get. And the name of the show is, I hope that does justice to that.
Yeah. Yes, correct.
So as unfiltered as it can get. So that's a good part. And you're not going by the trends. You're not going by what your competition is doing. You're not going by what some technology trend is supposed to be. And you're just trying to chase that trend. The customers tell you what is to be done, what they accept, what they reject, what they're willing to pay for, how much they're willing to pay for, and to what span they're willing to pay for. So that's a good part. Now, the negative part is that because you're still learning, you're understanding your point of reference is not formed there. Sometimes your time to market, because you have to figure out a lot of bits and pieces, is slightly higher. And due to the absence of a frame of reference to drive a lot of organizational clarity, consistency, and uniformity takes sort of a hitting, because you have to spend inordinate amount of time to drive clarity to the organization to deliver what's needed. Three, sometimes you will not just put a well-baked, well-thought-through product. You just figure it out as an aftermath that, hey, why couldn't we have solved this better? Because sometimes if it's not broken, why do you fix it? Or if somebody has built it, just copy it or steal it, right? With no nefarious designs. But if somebody's solved a problem, like let's just say take the e-commerce business. If somebody's done the last mile order tracking system really, really well, you can probably start with that as a baseline. Why would you want to reinvent what they've done? But you can think through the problem fundamentally different. You can architect your platform in a different way, but start with that baseline. So with us, with the absence of those baselines, it becomes difficult for us to figure out, and slightly the time to the market is higher than usual. So that's just the con. So that's how we sort of approach it.
Understand. Do you face any challenges given surveillance is a touchy topic, privacy, etc.? How do you get approvals to actually cordon off or manage a few areas? What are the unknowns for someone who's actually trying to start a company like this? Sure. Because you'll have to work with local authorities and things like that. I'm pretty sure you can't just, right. hey, I'm going to be a guard and have someone, you know, roaming around Indranagar. Sure. How does right. that work?
Yeah, so the concerns around privacy, surveillance, data protection always remains, and more yeah. so overstated in this industry. And interestingly, we have seen that it's a lot more high, it's a lot higher touchy subject than in fintech for whatever reasons there is.
Yes.
So, which is why there are some best practices out there followed in the West in terms of platform security, information security, and how you yourself manage your processes to keep your data, what operating principles that you can sort of do to safeguard, like how you anonymize your customers' data, how you keep it protected and safe at their premises, and how you build systems to give sufficiently decent exposure to our own internal teams and mask the rest out. So we follow the best practices and we continuously benchmark what's the best practices out there and manage it. Now, coming to this operational bit of working with authorities and do it. So we do have dedicated operations teams who regularly work with them to ensure that there's very solid relationship and a symbiotic relationship in that, to ensure that there are, like, either we are not on the wrong side of the law, or the law is not wrongly looking into us. So there's a legal framework in what we operate in, and we try to synchronize and provide our service. But there's always a risk in this industry that you're always exposed to some sort of an attack, especially with your surveillance systems and all. But that's a larger information security risk that we try to address with proactive monitoring, proactive system upgradation, and time-to-time audits.
Makes sense. I think one very big similarity between you, your business, and Ola's business is tech plus ops married together. And I think a pure tech or a pure ops business does not have as much of a defense as a tech plus ops business, because orchestrating real physical things with technology is quite hard. You know, that kind of relates to scaling and expanding. So what are your plans for taking this forward? Are you going to go deeper into Bangalore, because that's where you operate today?
Sure. So over the next 9 to 12 months, we definitely see ourselves building a lot more depth in Bangalore. And there's a lot more, there's just a significantly higher customer base to tap into, build our platform, deliver the promise. And post 2024, end of 2024 is where we look to sort of scale to the next two or three cities, top two to three more cities from there on. And then look into a few adjacent markets as the platform is sufficiently matured from there.
Understand. How does 56 Secure look like in 2033?
Definitely for enterprise and commercial, we want to be the top two players in the market. We want to definitely be as part of this very solid consideration set for most of the buying decision of customers. And for the larger market, we want to be known as a clear and credible, reliable brand around monitoring, intervention, and intelligence for any physical site. If you want to protect your property, your assets, and your people, we want to be the brand that people naturally look up to and hope you would have reached that quality and performance level to build a homegrown, large market security technology company. And today, that market is largely dominated by Chinese companies. We want to be that homegrown brand out there.
And to close out, why we call this Founders Unfiltered, and you alluded to it during our conversation, we ask our guests one piece of unfiltered feedback they've received. So what's something unfiltered that you've received in your journey, largely as an entrepreneur, that really changed your perspective? You took it well, and it was quite brutal and honest.
So one of the biggest unfiltered feedback that I've personally received is stop building fancy, stop building fantasy. Look at what's real. Look at what's valued and what data tells you, how people react and are and willing to pay for, because willing to pay for is the single biggest, and sustainably pay for and at the right price pay for, right? Is the single biggest feedback that you can get. Everything else is noise on top. And second is, don't build fantasy and function in your head what you think is right. It needs to have solid and regular validation in the market. The more you do that, the more you're chasing away from truth. So stick to the truth, stick to whatever your end customers or whom you're doing to or building for, get their validation and get their sort of inputs and bank on data. So I think it was a very convoluted answer to a simple question.
No, it makes sense. I think if I had to summarize, be real, talk to customers, don't try to be fancy. I think a lot of startups don't follow one or more of these in India.
I think it's gone. Just one point is beyond talk right now is try to sell and sustainably sell at the right price. Yes. Because the more you delay doing that, the more, because there are folks who would continuously be talking, interacting to customers, but still not doing the right thing, that is execute a transaction and try to provide a value against the transaction. I think that's...
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. Super. Sachet, thank you so much for sharing. We learned a lot about a very interesting and different business today. Thank you for sharing so openly with us.
Thank you, Arvind. Thanks for your time.
And looking forward to you building a sustainable and secure business at 56 Secure.
Thank you. Thanks, Avril. Thanks, Mazen. Pleasure talking to you folks.